You're talking to the one person in the world, maybe three people in the world. The other one is at Goldman Sachs. The other one is at McKinsey. But you're talking to one person in the world who's less than $5 million to have a conversation with for a few minutes, who has solved your problem 1,000 times.
You're listening to the Growth Manifesto podcast, where we host in-depth interviews with business leaders, authors, industry experts, and entrepreneurs with a singular focus around business growth. At the end of each podcast, we want you to walk away inspired to think bigger and to have actionable takeaways you can apply to improve your business. Each episode is like a masterclass on a key topic, so make sure to browse the episodes to find the topics that are most relevant to your biggest business challenges today. This podcast is brought to you by Web Profits, a digital growth consultancy that helps challenger brands drive growth in a complex and fragmented digital landscape. You can find out more about Web Profits at webprofits.io. Now, let's get into it. This is Alex Kleanthis, and today we're talking with Oren Claff, who's one of the world's leading experts on sales, on raising capital, and negotiation. He's the best-selling author of Pitch Anything and Flip the Script, and he's the director of capital markets at Intersection Capital. Today, we'll be talking about how to get more meetings, how to win more pitches, and how to close more deals. And just quickly, before we get started, make sure to go ahead and hit that subscribe button so that you get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Let's get into it. Hello, and welcome, Oren.
Hey, thank you. That's a very warm welcome.
Yeah, and this is pretty exciting because I first actually heard about you 10 years ago, I guess, or maybe, I don't know, 9 years ago, just because of the book Pitch Anything, which was kind of had this counterintuitive approach to sales that comes from someone with extreme experience, with significant experience, right?
And yeah, so it's so counterintuitive, no one wanted to publish it.
Really?
No.
Really? Wow. So that was a sales process in itself, right? And I'm sure you had to use some of the principles there to pitch it.
So I go, Simon & Schuster, you know, didn't want it. A bunch of the big publishers didn't want it. The publisher I'm currently with didn't want it. So finally I went to McGraw-Hill, right? And I walk in there and they have the senior editor who is really like this august, I want to be kind, you know, 60s years old editor in New York. Their office is in Manhattan. They have the entire building. It says McGraw-Hill on it. You're in the conference room overlooking Manhattan. They have all their little interns. You know, they have 9 people around the table. My agent and I walk in, right? And it's obviously who's the senior editor, who makes the choices, who's running the meeting, right? And her name was Anne. So I can't remember her last name. So I turn my attention to the lowliest analyst, intern in the room. I go, Anne, it's lovely to meet you. It's been good to talk to you on the phone, but listen, here's how this meeting is going to go, right? And so I yell at her and she goes, I'm not Anne. I'm like, okay, well, if you're not Anne, who are you? Why are you in this room, right? And then the lady speaks up and she goes, what is happening? And the intern goes, he's doing it. He's doing it to us, right? And I go, well, what do you want? Like, you expect me to come here and beg for the book deal? Of course I'm going to do the stuff that's in the book about the book in order to get the book. And they're like, yeah, you're in.
Yeah. And that's such a great story. And, you know, it's fascinating that some of these counterintuitive approaches to traditional ideas, they don't seem to cut through a lot of times, right? Because it's not safe, right? And I think, you know, so what's interesting about, you know, some of your approaches is that the fact that they are not safe is probably part of the reason that they actually have impact, that they actually stand out, you know?
Well, the other side of not safe, two sides of that pancake, is it raises the stakes, all right? And I'll tell you a little, but I have a little rant before I get into that. I'll tell you something else that's counterintuitive. If you speak to actual authors of the books you read, and I get them on podcasts, right? And there's something in their book and I go, do it. Okay. You know, branding, you know, sales. All right. Here's a situation, like run your shit. Right. And they're like, well, you know, strategy and thesis and big think. I'm like, wait a second. You wrote an entire book and you dragged me to your podcast. You can't actually do it. So Alex, anything in there you ask me, flash roll, winter's coming, plain vanilla. We'll just invent a company, invent the product, and we'll run through actual tactics and techniques live, right? So the different counterintuitive is people write books and then they can't actually do the stuff. And then they go on a podcast. So we're going to do stuff. But listen, listen, I have this big, let's see, I have this giant G-Wagon. It's called a G550 Square. It's 200 of them in the world. So there's like a regular, you know, Mercedes G-Wagon. This one is like super size. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but they're massive. I haven't seen it.
I'm going to look right after this podcast. I'm going to look at it.
Look it up while we're talking. It's 22 inches taller than a full-size Range Rover. It's massive. So anyway, I pack my family in it, and we're driving over the Coronado Bridge here in San Diego, right? And that goes like, and you're looking down at battleships. Like, they look like Lego toys. You're in the sky. Apollo and Zeus are there. Hey, would you like a coffee? Like, handing their hand comes out of the cloud. You are in the clouds, and I'm in this giant G-Wagon that we have. I don't know why we have it, but whatever. And the footwall is like this high on this giant bridge, at least, right? And so I slow down. You know, people are honking. Like, by the way, you know, I drive fast. I race motorcycles. You know, we turn the camera around. You know, there's some race cars right there, 10 feet in front of me. But I slow this truck down to 20 miles an hour, right? Because I'm high in the air. I'm in a big truck. The footwall is low, and I have my family in it. The stakes are high. You raise the stakes and things seem scary. So the trick is in sales, and I think this is what we should talk about, you know, business development, and you get out there, it's raising the stakes, right? But having a skill level. What happens is people raise the stakes, like, you know, what's raising the stakes? Saying to a customer, why are you asking me for a discount? This makes no sense, right? You want your vendors not to make any money? You deserve free product? Like, what? So why wouldn't you say that to a buyer, right? Well, because it raises the stakes, and then they say, hey, you're being rude to me. I'm going to work, you know, my other vendors are nice and I don't like rude vendors. But when people say to me, hey, can we get a 30% discount? I go, well, I'm sorry, I confused you. Right? I feel terrible, but I feel like this meeting just ended. So raising the stakes, but I have the skills to raise it. So really things feel edgy. But if other people get them to work, maybe you can get the skills to raise the stakes, and it just focuses decision-making when the stakes go higher. And ultimately, this is what I feel the problem is today. When you used to fly somewhere to Chicago, right, from California, go to a meeting, everybody get in that meeting, the stakes were high because you spent money, you traveled. There's a lot going on, and if they just came in and said, hey, we rescheduled, you know, could you do 3 o'clock? You're like, whoa, no, sir, not right. And yeah, I'm, you'll be 21 years old, an intern. No, sir, we are not rescheduling. I have to get to my grandma's funeral. Fuck you, right? We're having this meeting because the stakes are high. You get on a Zoom and they go, hey, I'm sorry, you know, Mr. Big couldn't make it. Can we reschedule for never? Like, oh yeah, anything you want, you know, because the stakes are low. So raising the stakes to signaling that I am not an information booth on the freeway of you trying to get a discount on whatever it is you're trying to buy. My time, and then I think, you know, now we're somewhere. Signaling in Zoom and in today's world in which connections are so quick and easy, my time, this call, is as valuable, if not more valuable, than your time. That's the signaling that raises the stakes. You are talking to the number one expert in the world who solves the shitty problem that you created for yourself. I don't have that problem. Our accounting system runs perfectly. We're not having an IRS audit. We're not getting crypto security scammed. Like, we don't have these problems. You have the problem. Not only do you have it as bad as anybody can get it. In fact, if you get this problem any worse, me and anybody credible is not even gonna be willing to work on it. Okay? Because you're just gonna be like, hey, come visit us on Hell Island. No, thank you. I don't wanna go to Hell Island. That's where you are, right? And it doesn't sound enticing. So now we're talking about correctly raising the stakes and letting people, and the stakes are, you have a problem, it's not going away. If you don't solve it, it's gonna get worse. You're talking to the one person in the world, maybe three people in the world. The other one is at Goldman Sachs. The other one is at McKinsey. But you're talking to one person in the world who's less than $5 million to have a conversation with for a few minutes, who has solved your problem 1,000 times. Alex, you know, I solved this problem. I hit that was easy button, and I fall. Like, I do it while I'm sleeping. We saw it's a complicated problem, but we solve it all the time. So let me contribute some of my time and my day to helping you out. Okay. But efficient. Let's be efficient.
And
now we have a call.
And for the listeners, he just pulled out a bunch of tactics, pulled them all together into that one little example, right? This book, Flip the Script, you know, so I got it a couple of months back, maybe 3 or 4 months back, and I was just going through it because I got Pitch Anything, I got Flip the Script. It's one of the only books that I bought, the audio book, the physical book, the Kindle book. I took notes. I have purchased it for people. It is for enterprise level sales and for enterprise level, I guess, engagement. It's one of the most refreshing approaches since Pitch Anything, surprisingly. So I'm going to try my best to touch on it at a very high level and just to give the listeners, I guess, a quick overview so they get, you know, kind of some of the substance. But I highly recommend everyone to purchase this book, right? This book for enterprise sales and for how to structure a deal simplifies it in a really sophisticated way, right? And I'm sure that the conversation with Oren right now, he's going to be showing examples of how he positions himself. Like he just did it a second ago, right? With he just flipped it like on the person, right? So,
and I think to jump in on you, like the big thing to notice is status. All right. Status drives a lot of your ability. Everybody wants to close, right? That's the fun part. Teach me some closing lines. Teach me pickup lines. Teach me, you know, ways to close, right? But the way, let me teach you my best close. Guys, we're out of time. What should we be doing together? I have to jet. That's the close. Now, that's very powerful. What should we be doing together, right? But the reason you can use that close is when you open high status and you open as an expert and you have tons of actual and perceived value, then you have something to take away. And the reason I wanted to go there is because I had on my podcast, Anthony Scaramucci, who was the White House communications director for 11 days. He's on CNN. You know, maybe he looks a little bit goofy online to you, but he is he worked for Goldman Sachs, manages a $4 billion fund, graduated Harvard Business School, has a degree in finance. Like he was at the White. He's a real dude. So I get on the podcast and I can see he's doing his own stuff. He probably doesn't know my name. The PR director just, you know, booked us. And I'm like, this guy's going to be a problem because he's just going to phone it in. And you could see that I don't like phoned in interviews, right? So he's just going to phone it in. He's probably not even looking in the camera. And it's just going to be this smooth, you know, hey, I was White House director, blah, Trump and blah, 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 right? Bada bing, bada bong, bada boom. So he comes on and I go, ladies and gentlemen, I'm so excited to have here today. And it's just, it's unbelievable that I was able to get such a guest to this podcast. It's really unthinkable. Somebody I've been wanting to talk to for many, many years. I'd like to introduce you to Kathy West from ARK Investments. And he goes, what? I'm not Kathy. I'm like, what? You're not, who are you? What are you doing? Like, what are you doing? So status works both ways. When somebody comes in super high status, right? They're going to, when somebody feels powerful over you, they don't listen well. They don't see you as a person. They see you transactionally. And they take risks with you that they wouldn't take with a peer or somebody more powerful than them. So when people believe that they are higher status than you or more powerful than you, again, this is so, so important. They take risks they wouldn't take otherwise. They see you transactionally and only as a surface level and aren't interested in you, all right? And so sometimes you've got to lower somebody's status, which is tricky, but you know, just showed you there how to do it. And I've done that many times with celebrities. Like every celebrity I meet, I have to do the exact same thing. I'll give you other examples. But I can give you another example of lowering somebody's status to your level.
So first part in terms of the process of the flip the script process, let's call it, is status alignment, right? So this is basically just to ensure that the person who you're trying to engage with sees you at least at the same level, right? And so
correct. This
is the conversation so far. And so what we just spoke about was that there's basically increasing how you're perceived or, you know, just lowering them, right? So if you could provide an example of both, that'd be great, right? Because I think this is the hardest part for people to, I think, comprehend is like, how do I establish status when maybe I don't think I have the status, you know?
So most people sabotage their own status. Hey, Alex, so great to be on the podcast. Oh my God, I'm really excited to do it. I'm a little bit nervous, you know, to be on. I did, a ton of prep. Can you hear me okay? Like, do I look okay? It's just, I had my mom iron my shirt, because I really wanted to look good. Anyway, am I talking too much? So, all right, no reason to do all that. And I'm exaggerating, but more like, hey, I'm really excited to be here. We have a presentation we'd like to show you. I think you're going to love it. Want to let you know at our company, customer service is number one. You can call us on the weekend. I give you my grandmother's fax number, whatever you need to reach me, anytime, day or night. We do whatever it takes to keep the customer happy. I think you're going to love this presentation. I'm going to show it to you, and then I'll ask you if you have any questions. Anyway, I really think you're going to like this presentation. Woo! Okay? So that's a mistake. I'll give you an example that's done at a very sophisticated level, probably very similar to the Anthony Scaramucci example I just gave you. By the way, at the end of that podcast with Anthony Scaramucci, he goes, Orin, oh my God, I want to drive down and meet you and let's do something together. So we started with, I don't know who this person is. My PR agent made me take this and I'm going to phone it in with White House, blah, 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 to I'll drive to you and let's work together. That's status alignment. Give you another quick example here because I know we have other things to get to, but I was speaking at a large event and the speaker before me was Emmett Smith. Emmett Smith is the Dallas Cowboys MVP, maybe the most well-known football player in America from that era. The Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl winning dynasty, MVP multiple times of the league, of the Super Bowl, and 100 millionaire, and then went on in resurgence, won Dancing with the Stars. So it's just me and Emmett Smith in the green room waiting to go speak. And the organizer, and he has an entourage, but the entourage has to split off because the deal is it's just he and I in the green room eventually. So the conference organizer goes, hey, Orin, I want to introduce you to, I go, wait, oh my God, I never thought I would ever get to meet Randall Cunningham, who's another football player, but it's not Emerson. And he goes, I ain't Randall Cunningham. Like, there's not a person in America that doesn't go, oh, Emmett, oh my God, I remember you from the Super Bowl. Can I get your autograph? Except for Orin Klaff, because I would love to do that. I'd love him to sign my rump, right? In permanent marker, of course. I want to hug him and lick his face. I love football. But if I do that, he's going to be like, yeah, whatever. Like, so finally, I was on him. Finally, he goes, I'm sorry, what's your name? Right? What do you do? So Emmett Smith asked Orin Klaff, what does he do? What's his career? What are his goals in life? Does he have any kids? When I got the status aligned, when he thought he was a superstar and I was a peon speaker from, fanboy, 46-year-old white dude, dreaming of one day meeting Emmett Smith, I had no value. When I didn't care about any of that and I didn't even know who he was, right? And we were just got peer to peer, then we had status alignment. So you cannot go into the customer and get a meeting with the CEO and put them on a pedestal and make them feel more powerful than you. As we said, that's status alignment for sure.
And so, okay, let's say that it is the CEO, right? And let's say that there is a presentation that's super important, right? Now, the stakes are high and now you either have a decision to increase your own status or to put them a bit lower down in their status, we'll call it, right?
You're gonna have to take them lower. You have to take them lower. I'm gonna give you the tool.
Is that the only way, is it? You can't increase yourself to that level.
Yeah, because they come in, they're not listening to you. It's transactional, right? They're not listening to you. You can say, hey, I just have mined rare earth minerals from an asteroid. I built my own suit. I flew up to it. I got the rare earth minerals here. And I have a goose that shits out golden coins, right? And there's gonna, sorry, what were you saying again?
Okay. Right? So how do you do it tactfully then? Because it seems risky for some clients. It's a $10 million deal. Yeah.
You don't have to do it the Orin Klaff way. Here's the issue. What can you do? We're a great company. We try really hard. Microsoft is our client. They don't care. And so it's very hard to raise you got to pull them down a little bit. the tactful, reasonable way to do it is I love you guys. I'm very excited about this meeting. Really prepared hard for it. Am thankful for the time, you know, with senior leadership. And I see you're confused. You're like, wait a second. This is exactly what you said not to do. But it's a setup. So that's a setup. Excited to be here. Very mindful of time with leadership. Prepared really hard. I've got a presentation for you. I hope you love it. One thing that I aim to do in this meeting is I see some things that you guys are saying and trying to do, but I also see some things on the website that are confusing, that are actually the opposite of what I would expect you guys to do and say, given what I'm hearing from you in this scope of work. So my goal is to square that hole and try and figure out what is actually going on here.
Mm.
Okay.
So you're calling something out.
Calling, every single company will be doing something weird. Disney is doing all this weird LGBTQ equal sign, apostrophe, you know, backwards three, which is fine, right? But, you know, Disney Disney used to be like, hey, we're going to come over and the kids are going to watch Disney movies. Great, right? They got to be careful. So every company, even Disney, is doing weird things. So pull something weird and say, just we're seeing these things. Most companies will have something on their website that is anathema to how they're behaving. So it's just really easy. I saw something on the website. It says you're the founder-friendly company, but then I see you guys retrading every single deal, you know, and grinding. So I'm trying to figure out if either one is fine. I just don't, it's confusing who you really are. And as part of this conversation, I'd like to get that cleared up. But of course, we're going to present to you what, you know, we think you should do next and why you should work with us and why we're the best. So that is supplicating as a setup. And then, pulling them down a peg. I'll give you an easier way to test this out. All right. Mm-hmm. That is incredibly powerful. It works best on Zoom calls or phone calls, but meetings as well, right? So in my experience, I work with billionaires, I work with CEOs, I work with leadership. They always come to a call late. 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 minutes. If it goes past 8 minutes, we, you know, bye and reset.
I give them five minutes.
Okay, so yeah. They come late, right? Yeah. And I always go, Alex, hey, welcome to the 10:05 call.
Simple.
And it's amazing. You have to do this. And so every senior manager knows the value of time. 100% of the time, they'll go, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, and they'll say things like, I'm sorry, you know, we have a ship that's at the port of Los Angeles and we're trying to unload medical supplies critical for children. And I had to sign off to get the medical supplies approved by the government. I'm so sorry. And so they will start out apologizing to you, rightly so, right? They didn't say, hey, I'm going to be a few minutes late. So, hey, welcome to the 10:05 call. Are you ready? We can get that call started now if you want. Very nice, fun, easy way. Does anybody need fluids in, out? If not, let's get that call started.
Yeah, that's good.
Nice okay. And easy.
That's a really good little tip. And it's really just put them off balance, right? That's what you're trying to do. Just put them a little bit off balance. What? Hey, what's going on here? This is not how I've spoken to usually. There's something here, maybe, you know? It's that, isn't it?
No one will be offended by that. By the way, if somebody's offended by that, I probably have done that 3,000 times. If somebody is offended by that, huge warning sign, right? Everybody knows the value of time. You came to the call on time. You set it up. You were professional. If they don't say, yeah, that's pretty funny, that there's a, and that's the other thing about these kind of frame control things is if people act weird, right? But everything you and I are going to talk about is about taking the normal, owning the center line, owning normal. What's normal? Showing up on time, having values, putting stuff on your website that you say what you mean, you do what you say, that syncs up with how you actually behave. Whenever you take that moral center, right? They're constantly fighting. Your jokes are actually funny. Okay. Like they're constantly fighting to pull themselves back into the high status center. And so you take that position. Happy to be flexible. I see you're here for the 10:05 meeting. We can get that meeting started. Anybody need fluids in or out? If not, guys, let's roll.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got it.
So sorry. love, you know, blah, 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 right? So that's great. And by the way, that's just jujitsu class day one. You don't have to flip somebody over your back, spin around, flying rear naked choke. All it is tapping them on the shoulder and turning them a little bit sideways. Jujitsu day one.
Yeah.
There's no risk in that.
Yeah.
Definitely start, and it's fun, by the way. And like everything you'll see about what I do is not intended to control people. It's just intended to own the center line, which is fun, interesting, unique, high integrity, have value, and expert, high status, and busy. When you own that, then people are constantly trying to meet your standard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's great. And so this is part of Status Alignment. There's a lot more in the book around kind of the terminology, the words, the shared stories, their problems in like their industry. So there's quite a lot that can be added to this. This is a fantastic way just to start a meeting well, you know, start a meeting so that they listen, right?
Let's just talk about that for a second.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
If people don't think you know their industry, it's very hard for them to trust you with a conversation. So some alignment that I have some profile and understanding of your industry, and I'm just, you know, then now we've got status alignment and we've got a basis for a trusted conversation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, I think what status alignment thinking forces people to do, professionals to do, is to do the research before they start talking to someone. I think there's so much shortcutting of like, hey, you know, like it's me. It's not about them. It's not about trying to come to them and to meet them. It's all about, hey, like if I do 1,000 of these outreaches and I get 100 responses and I get 10 things and I do 2 of those, then all of a sudden I'm going to get a sale. And it just doesn't, like that maybe worked 10 years ago. Maybe, but these days it's a lot more competitive. Everything's on Zoom. It's getting a lot more competitive even just to cut through. So I think like a lot of these are really good ways to cut through. So I'm going to move it to the next point, right? And this part will keep high level because it can get technical, but the flash roll. Now, so the flash roll, I'll just start it, right? The flash roll, I'm sure that, of course, for the listeners, right? You've always been told to not talk technical jargon to prospects, right? To not say, hey, to not have acronyms and to not go too technical. Now, like in this book, Flip the Script, again, like I'm extremely impressed by this book. There's a thing called a flash roll where for 90 seconds, you get super technical, right? And then the aim of it is to really just to show technical expertise, right? And so can you just talk about just where this came from at least, like the thinking? Because it's the first time I heard use all the jargons, make it as technical as possible, but keep it short.
For sure. If you've ever watched CNBC's Squawk Box, right, and listened to the CEO of 10,000 employee companies, you know, Shell Oil or... you know, I'm just trying to think like, you know, they have these big manufacturing, you know, concerns or, you know, 3,000 employees and $4 billion of revenue. They really fall into two camps. One are like these strategy guys. You also see them on this show, like Undercover Boss, right? Mm. They like run 7-Eleven. Right. And he goes and he like has to prepare the nachos. And he's like, well, you know, where does the nacho go? And oh, cheese goes on it. Right? Wait, jalapeno? Like, he doesn't know anything about how to do it. And so in Squawk Box, you have guys like, you know, based on the uptick of the inflation and the power purchasing of the dollar, it feels like, you know, our supply chain is going to need to tighten over the next 3 months. Right? And then there's like big high-level strategic. All right? The CEOs that you really respect are the guys who have done all the jobs coming up to the company. And they can get super tactical briefly and then come up to strategy. What are you guys doing in the business? So like, you know, a guy running Audi, we really feel like electric, this is perfect. I'm just making this up on the spot, but I think this is a great example. We really feel like gas engines have lived their time. That's why we've committed by 2028 to have all electric vehicles in our thing. We think that's what the consumers want. We think that's what the mandate is for the what government mandates are going to be. And we think that's actually going to be good for our business and improve the bottom line. But it's interesting, right? So that's great. Strategy, that's a CEO, right? But what's amazing is when they go, you know, I'm down in the EV lab, and really at 1.2 angstroms, you can get those electric vehicle motors to really have the level of power per horsepower per pound that is over 100 times that you could get with a gasoline engine, right? When we put that on the test track and really monitor the data, you know, I look at the split testing between this and this, and I've been on the track for a couple of days, you know, actually driving the car, and then we look at the data, and you see this red, I actually have it on my phone here. You see this red line here? That's where we are hitting the economic level of power performance that is 10 times higher than gas. And that's really where we want to be. And it's a pleasure to drive that vehicle because the response rate at the shocks mimics that of what you could get in a typical luxury car at a third of the price. And you're like, this motherfucker right here, running the business, driving the cars, looking at the data, talking to engineers, right? And you go, well, he goes, yeah, you know, I was an electrical engineer for a couple of years, and then I moved up to management. And you go, this guy can get super deep. There's no level of deep that I can take him where he's going to run out of awareness of what he's doing. This is a problem with salespeople. We believe you want the order. We believe you're going to try hard. We believe your product has a value proposition. Right, we believe when we install it, you know, it's going to install and things are going to happen. What I don't believe is you really understand the product at an implementation level. I don't believe that you live in the details. I think you're just a sales guy. And then if I want to have any details, you have to go, well, I have to get my sales engineer, you know, or my engineer in, or I have to get my CFO in, or I have to get the founder in. I give you another little story that shows you the harm in not being able to get super technical for a short period of time. Oh, so by the way, this skill set of being broad, value proposition, strategy, thesis, capability, understanding your problem solution, how things are changing, you know, understanding the need for a solution to a broad set of problems, but then being able to go deep, that is magical. It has people trust you, believe in you when they don't think you're just a generalist. And then the other thing is most people who go deep into the details, engineering, technical specifications, mathematics, financial analysis, they stay there. They can't get out of that hole. They go deep and they stay deep. And then that's why the advice is where you started. Don't get into jargon. Don't get into engineering. Keep people out of that. Keep them high level in sales, right? Because it's overwhelming. But when you can go for 90 seconds into this flash roll and just expose. So the details are not for comprehension. You're not teaching anybody anything about the details. All you're doing is showing them in the flash roll that you have technical mastery of your subject. And the power of this is amazing. But so now we're in the office, right? It's a thing we do here. And everyone's like, oh, he just flash rolled me. I know he doesn't really know that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because everybody's now learning these flash rolls, you know, to signal that they know a subject. And he's like, wait, did you just flash? So now we don't even know who knows what in what deal around here, because they're these flash rolls. Did you just flash roll me? I just want to give you a quick example. I know you want to move on. But so I'm trying to buy this software, this encoding software. I'm pretty technical. This video encoding software to get in a certain format that we need for our presentations, right? And I'm on the website of the company that provides this software. And so I have a couple of questions, and I get on the chat with, you know, one of their customer service people. And I'm asking very technical questions, and they're answering in like broad euphemisms. Yes, of course we do that. We've done that for years. Our software does it. And I go, listen, I need to talk to somebody who's technical, right? These answers are not satisfying me. And he goes, so then he chats back, I'm technical. I go, doesn't seem like you are. And then he writes back, I'm the founder, right? And the CTO. I'm like, what, dummy? Why are you not showing me your technical depth so I can believe in you. So as a salesperson, you have to find a way to show some technical depth in your product and in your industry. You don't have to do it for 5 or 10 or 15, for 90 seconds. Just show me that you can get into the details, come back out, and keep moving on value proposition and strategy.
And, you know, just some ideas around that could be cool. So specific industry insight and then a technical application like of that execution, right? So there can be some prep and there can be some scripting and there can be some practice where you have enough to go on, right? And hopefully the person who you're presenting to hasn't read Flip the Script and they're trying to check in on some of those things. But look, I mean, I have not... this is the first time I've heard about something like this, right? So I don't think it's out there yet, right? So now's the time to start to use this, right? Because in the beginning when, you know, it's a novel idea, which we're going to get to in a minute, it can start to be effective, right? But the big idea, right? It's kind of winter is coming, you know, it's the thing which you're coming to them with, right? So I think, please.
If somebody doesn't believe the world is changing, and that change is going to sweep what they're doing away, then they don't have motivation to listen, to change, and to adapt to a new world order. Now, it used to be hard to come up with winter is coming, you know, 5 years ago, because nothing was fucking going on, okay? But today, you know, every single industry and every single winter is only coming, it's come. So you have the pandemic, you have travel restrictions, you have masking, you have vaccines, you have right-left polarization, you have logistics problems, you have high cost of gas, you have inflation, stagflation. I mean, every single industry is changing. So unless you come in and say, you know, so pick an industry, Alex, and let's try and tackle something.
Insurance.
Insurance, great. If you're an insurance company, what's really happening is, AI has entered insurance companies are adding artificial intelligence and machine learning to the actuarial tables, are wiping out their competitors, like not in a 5-year cycle, like in 18 months, right? Because they can offer very specific pricing to specific cohorts that are not achievable by the other companies. So any company, any insurance company that hasn't fully implemented AI, you know, to the point of, you know, having 10 to 20 AI engineers internally are going to fall back from their lead position and potentially just become the BlackBerry MySpace of their industry. Everything is changing in insurance based on this AI. Now, there is a new world order, right? This winter is going to wipe out everybody who's not adapting, right? But if you adapt in a specific way, which I'm going to propose to you, you will be sitting where every company wants to be. And you'll, instead of having 1,000 competitors, you know, everybody implements AI and machine learning correctly in this way, and there'll be 3 competitors to deal with. And the new world order is better, cleaner, more profitable. But if you don't start taking action now to get there, AI is going to what? And I'll give you an example of this. I believe in 1954, I have to look it up, when television came to the consumer market, it wiped out 80% of the theater business. Gone in a year.
That's like Netflix now, isn't it?
These wipeouts really happen. When the iPhone came, BlackBerry wiped out. So, the right way to use winter is coming is to really show in your industry the last 3 times it's happened. And this is, it's very easy to predict exactly what is doing in media, in technology, in insurance. You can see, I'll give you a really good example, is one thing that causes these nuclear winters in the entertainment business is that consumer preferences change. So if you think about those movies, The Hangover 1, you know, made $1 billion, right? Hangover 2, you know, less Hangover, but you can't do The Hangover today because people don't think that's funny.
They don't think it's right? funny anymore? Maybe I'm getting old.
No, they would still be doing them. You'd have Hangover 11.
Yeah, of course.
That kind of humor, sure. It's funny, you look at the old Hangover, ha, ha, ha. But like, you know, for real billion-dollar releases, all right, that consumers no longer, something about Mary, right? Like that slapstick, very visceral humor in today's world where we had the pandemic, it's not funny. Mm. Right? Go back even further, right? You know, you can, Jews and gays and Catholics and, you know, Italians and Poles and, you know, people with tattoos and people in the 80s, right? The movies would make fun of, you know, people with disabilities. I mean, go watch Bad News Bears. You can't make that movie today, right? Mm. That consumer preference is wiped out. It's not like you can sneak your way in. So a nuclear winter is something that is happening in the industry that no one, so that's a little bit different from changes. Things are changing. When you say things are changing, then the buyer thinks, yeah, but not to us. And we have a hack and workaround. Mm. Winter is coming. No one can get out of this sweeping change. I don't care how smart you are. You have to leave the old way of doing things behind and adapt to a new way. All right. So you've got to figure out what is that nuclear winter that you can see entering the industry that is going to wipe your buyer out unless he adapts to the next way of doing things and gets ahead of this wipeout. And you cannot come to me with an industry and say, there's no nuclear winter in our industry, you know, especially today. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, in the old days, you know, maybe like if it was furniture, nothing was changing, you sort of had to think really hard, but every industry is in some kind of wipeout mode, right? And so now, if they believe that their way of doing things is going to be made irrelevant by the things that are coming, electric vehicles, right? So if you go to a car manufacturer and you go, listen, electric vehicles are coming, they're like, yeah, we know. Right? We're aware of that. We're phasing out gasoline. You're like, okay, good. So anybody who's like, hey, we're dedicated to the gasoline engine, right? We're not doing any development in EV, it's just going to get wiped out. Mm. And it's just a very clear example of that. So you have to bring that to the customer up front.
Yeah, and I think this is because, yes, sorry, I got you off, yeah.
Well, the only thing I was going to say is like, and it has to be insightful. It can't be like, right, because you can really hurt yourself by saying, hey, you know, electric vehicles are, if you, you know, you go to Brembo, a brake manufacturer, you know, or somebody who's in the industry, you go, you know, electric vehicles are on the rise. You're like, hey, asshole, who let you in here? Okay.
It's like, obviously, it's like, come on.
It needs to be insightful.
My kid knows that, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Right. It can't be, you know, on USA Today colored in crayons. So, now it can be the thing that everybody knows about, but you got to add some insight to it, like some data and some specificity, right? So, a good example is solar is now becoming to the point, solar and wind, Texas gets on some days gets half of its energy from solar and wind. You probably know that you're in the industry, you're fully aware of that. But one thing that's really interesting is that solar has now peaked beyond it's no longer necessary to mandate communities to implement solar power. They're doing it on their own, and all the regulations are sort of falling off in favor of new stuff because it no longer needs subsidies. Consumers are just doing it on your own, and here's some data on that. So now you have the sweeping issue that people are aware of, and you are tightening it up. So your winter is coming is meaningful.
Mm. So do the research and come up with some solid insight that they're going to be like, I didn't know that. Oh, that's helpful.
When you can provide some insight to somebody about their business, you are in.
Mm.
You are an insider. Your deal is basically sold. Unless you screw it up, you know, you just got to go through the numbers. But especially like in the car industry, I mean, they're so data-driven. they have so much awareness. It's so esoteric. When you can walk into like someone in the car industry and provide them some insight on their piece of the car industry, it blows their mind. And there are 100, you know, it's a little separate issue, but the winter people have to be aware that things are changing so fast and so dramatically. They cannot just keep solving their problems in the way that they have been solving them.
Mm. And this is like causing their desire to grow, them to take action. Again, assuming there's status alignment, which we already talked about, right? So that's super, super important. There's a flash roll, so they trust your technical expertise. And now you throw at them some insight about their industry. Start to see how this process stacks on itself, right? And it's very deliberate.
Here's one I love, right? Like for everybody, if you think that you're going to be able to run your business from an accounting standpoint the way you have in the past, right? I got sad news for you. You cannot call the office supplies, you know, your swimming pool office supplies anymore. You can't buy a laptop for your own personal use for your kid's school, right? And then write it off on the business. The AI, the level of AI that the IRS and the government has, right? They know. Okay, they have 300 million data points. They have the data, and they know when you are. So if they don't have the actual data that you're cheating on your taxes, they have the pattern match and the likelihood, and then you get a data request. Cheating on your taxes is not what it used to be. If you are still doing those bad accounting practices, you are going to get crushed by the current audit system.
That's winter is coming. That's a good winter is coming.
Hey guys, look at Alex. He's like, oh man, I better fucking not.
No. I'm solid. I'm CPA solid. No. Solid. 100% solid.
But that to me is like the perfect example of, you know, being able to sell accounting services to, you know, a business. And the point is not to terrify people. The point is to bring into high relief actual forces that are truthfully going to really affect them, and just let them know, because that starts the clock ticking. You have some control, because you go, listen, this is what we do. We help people get out of the way of this force and move into the next generation. But because this force is coming so fast, almost faster than expected, we're super busy. And so I made a little bit of time to help you understand how to solve your problems and get out of way of this change and get positioned for the next 5 years. But if you don't want to do it, just tell me so I can go help the people who are super motivated to get this done.
Framing. Look at it. Look at the positioning. This is great. All right. So there are some more parts to the big idea. There's the 2X concept and the skin in the game. That's in the book, but I think the big concept is, well, they're all super important.
Here's the problem with salespeople.
Yeah.
You're trying to make a commission, right? So you sell the order, you book it, they deliver it, the software installs, everything works for 60 days, right? And then it doesn't work, all right? And you have, not that you're a bad person, but you've gone on to Microsoft. Okay. And then this happened to me. I called the company. I'm like, hey, Joe sold me this. Joe's gone. Well, it's not working. Well, we don't know what he sold you. Right. So Joe needs to have skin. And if he wants to sell, and everybody's been through this and they know what happens. The way to sell is you have skin in the game. Like the easy skin in the game is like, hey, just want to let you hear this all the time. Want to let you know is that I'm on flat rate. Like I only make a sales commission if you've been on the software for more than a year. Nice and skin in the game. I want to know that I'm not going out in the boat you sold me and you're waving to me from the shore. How's it going? Any leaks out there? Right? Call customer service if there's any leaks. Anyway, got to go, have a date. I want to know you're in the boat with me. And if it starts leaking, your destiny and my destiny are entwined and our fates are doomed our fortunes and our fates to the upside or the downside are entwined. And that makes So when people believe that you have skin in the game, it lowers their uncertainty about working with you.
And when people speak about skin in the game historically, it's always been a financial, I guess, incentive, right? Skin in the game's in the book. I did want to touch on plain vanilla, the novelty sweet spot, because a fantastic example out of the book was, please.
Yeah, I worked at a private equity venture capital fund called Alcatel Ventures. A guy named Steve Kim had sold his company to Alcatel. They asked him to run Alcatel Ventures, you know, billionaire, 500 millionaire, whatever. And so I worked there as an analyst. And the thing they said is like, hey, what we're mindful of is how many risks are we stacking up? And they would say, listen, one of the risks like we don't care about is technical risk. We believe like these smart engineers or these software engineers or these hardware engineers, like they always build what they say they're going to build. Like the one time over 100 deals, they'd be like, fuck, we can't build it. They always figure out how to build it or code it. So that's like not a high risk, right? But so really they say, Oren, you'd love every deal, but the thing, how many risks are we stacking up, right? And so what I realized in my deals is if I could just boil it down to one risk and everything else in the deal was normal and has been done over and over again. And this is what I try and show all the entrepreneurs and salespeople that I work with is like, this is the regular way of doing it, except we've added this one twist. And so why there's so many things that this has accomplished, right? Which is people love things that are new and it attracts them. Hey, we have a new software program. Oh, great. AI and machine learning. And, you know, it's got all this new stuff and it's going to make you all this money. Great. I love it. And they run over and they check it out. And then they go, we love it, but we're also super nervous because it's so new. And so there's lots of, you know, consumer stuff that the book talks about, but like, you know, what does something have to be for you to change your painkiller? Like you use Tylenol or Advil, right? Like, I mean, you can't reduce the price. It's whatever, you know, 5 cents a pill costs nothing. I mean, even if you buy it at a gas station in a little 2-pill pack, I mean, even I'm like, I expect to pay $8. They're like, yeah, it's $1.35 for two, right? So you can't make it cheaper. Can't make it better. Like you drink it and like 5 minutes later, your headache's gone or your hangover's gone. And so why would, and like, you know, there's no motivation to switch. And so it's very hard to introduce something new to people. And so when I try and get them to adapt a new service or come over to me, right? So, give you an example, we're an investment bank, right? And so people go, how are you different? I go, we're not different. Every single investment bank does the same thing. You can go to a Starbucks in Newport Beach and 8 a.m. and meet 25 investment bankers stopping in to get a cafe Americano, right? And you go, what do you do? And it was saying exactly all investment bankers do exactly the same thing. Plain vanilla. The one thing that I think you'll be, that we do better than anybody else is we don't do mass market mailings. Send out, in essence, a jump ball, right? Buyers of companies or investors hate deals that look like a jump ball. That's just going to be a massive, everybody coming in and everybody, you know, an auction and their money. It's only about the money. Because they real investors want to come in and know if they're working on the deal, if they're looking at authentically, like their name means something, their brand means something, their ability to close means something. They just don't want to go in the mosh pit with every Tom, Dick, and Harry. They want respect for who they are. So we rifle shot. We call those guys up and go, John, hey, listen, I have a deal I think you're going to love. It's not being shopped. We're letting a couple people look at it early. Love for you to come in, talk to the entrepreneur and see if it's something you'd be interested in, but it's not going broadly to the market. And so that's what we do. And if you like that, then you'd love the way we do things. If you just want to send out 500 teasers to everybody in the market, well, you know, then you can get all these guys in Newport Beach to do that for you, but we won't do it. Mm. So one twist. So if you think about it, well, what was Uber? Well, it's a fucking taxi cab, but you get to see, is it actually coming to you and how long will it be there? What was Airbnb, right? It was a B&B, but you could book it online and get a sense of, you know, see some photos of it and get some ratings on it, right? So it was to get an overnight stay. But all the stuff existed. When you look at WeWork, what was WeWork, right? WeWork, they already had co-working. It was green co-working. That's it. If you look at all these big companies, they were the exact same thing of stuff that was already out there with one interesting twist. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage you, if you could, to try and put what you have in plain vanilla terms and say, but we have this innovation. And now somebody can evaluate just your innovation as a risky part and not everything.
And I like your story, the story in the book about the hotel. And if it's too disruptive, if it's too novel, there's going to be some like significant immediate interest, but then it's too risky, right? And so I thought that was a fantastic story because I think there's so many people trying to be like completely different, but they don't realize that it's completely risky then for the person who's buying it. So I think that's a really great twist on the process. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, this is the problem, right? Hey, we're changing the world. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get new tires on my truck. I don't want to change the world.
Mm.
I want truck tires.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
We're sending socks to every kid in Nicaragua. Okay. That is a very narrow subset of people who want to mine asteroids for rare earth minerals.
Mm.
Right? Most companies want to do it the established way, but improved. So when the winter is coming, the improvement lets them live and survive and thrive on the other side of the nuclear winter.
Yeah, which is great. And I've just got just one more question, and there's so many more questions, but I've got one more because I know I'm conscious of time. How do you actually just get the first meetings, right? Because the conversation's all about, you know, status, alignment and all this and, you know, presenting a certain way and so on. But how do you actually just get that first meeting? Like, is it taking the winter is coming, some status alignment and, you know, just doing outreach, or is there, you know, how would you do it?
Yeah. So we've done hundreds of thousands of outreach emails. And we have a whole course on cold email, but I'd give you the basics, right? One is serendipity. If there's a feeling like some forces collided to cause this email to happen, not this is programmatic. I was talking to Alex, right? He mentioned your name twice. I ignored him because, you know, we know him in common, social, and he's got the podcast and everything. But then your name came up in a meeting for the third time, and I'm like, I better send this email in. I looked at the website. It turns out you do exactly what we do. Let's connect for 5 minutes. Worst case, we put each other's name in the Rolodex. Best case, we have a lot in common and start working on a project. How about Tuesday, 10:30, Wednesday, 3 p.m., either work. That's it. I bet that's 130 words.
Mm. So you're not going in with a big hook or anything like that. It's just more social engagement, serendipity.
Serendipity. Mm. Social engagement. And one other thing, I'm not a robot.
Not a robot. Okay. It's not a bulk
misspellings. So I'll tell you about something I invented. This sucks now because now if everybody starts doing it, it will erase. Many times in origination, I send the whole email in the subject line, 300 words. Have you ever seen that?
No, I have never seen that.
You haven't. That's right.
Test it, though.
Novelty.
That's for sure.
Novelty. Okay. This is not a robot. I'm a real person. Something serendipitous or chance coincidence caused this email to happen. There's something very specific to discuss. How about one of these times?
Hmm. I like that. I like that. Super a lot. Strong. Yeah, great. Oren, thank you so much for such a high-powered, quick, completely value-adding conversation. For the listeners, I mean, I've said it throughout the podcast, but you just have to get the book. It's like it will be the best investment in terms of the sales effectiveness, the ability to structure deals, and any type of engagement is where the stakes are high. But for the listeners, apart from them actually having to purchase the book, which I highly recommend, like, is there any other, say, site or podcast that they should subscribe to?
Go to orenklaff.com, and there's tons of stuff there, and sign up for the list. I put out an email, two emails a week, and they're all this stuff. Right? And then eventually, if you're actually raising money, which is the highest form of sales, then come either to one of my events here at this office or join the online community that I have, and we'll help you raise money. But salespeople can get all of this stuff. They just go on the weekly newsletter that just comes out, because we talk about real situations, real tactics every single week. So just go over to orenklaff.com and many good things will happen.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This has been such a great conversation. And the best part about it is just the content in the book. So, but again, thank you for your time, because I know how valuable that is. And we'll talk soon. Thanks for listening to the Growth Manifesto podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. For more episodes, please visit growthmanifesto.com/podcast. And if you need help driving growth for your company, please get in touch with us at webprofits.io.